Do you think Jesus gets like dual gifts on his birthday? You know, from his stepdad, he's like, "Happy birthday, son." It's kind of, I don't know. Merry Christmas too. I don't know. So the other day I'm over at San Joaquin Hospital, south of Stockton, in this area called French Camp, and I had to drop off some medical trays for a surgeon, and I pulled up to the front of the hospital, and there's all these people kind of gathered up around out front. I'm like, what's going on here? So there's a big glass revolving door, and then two side entrances, they're all locked, and I couldn't get in. I'm kind of scratching my head, like, what the hell's going on here? This is the main entrance. And then finally, an older Indian woman opened the door. There, the people outside were pointing towards the entrance that she'd opened, and she was the screener, so she was screening everyone. And she waved me over. I came in, and she said, "Let me take your temperature." I said, "Wouldn't it suck if you had to do it rectally?" And I don't think she heard me properly, but then I go, good thing it's not rectally. What if you had to do that? Wouldn't that suck? If that's how you had to take everyone's temperature? And she finally kind of, it dawned on her what I was asking her, and she kind of rolled her eyes and just kind of placated me and had me move along, sonny boy. Move along, butt boy, balloon knot boy. And, anyway, happy Thanksgiving, all you motherfuckers. I fucking hate Thanksgiving. I like the notion of Thanksgiving, except for the day of. It's like hospitals. I like the notion of hospitals, as long as I don't have to be in them or around them. I will definitely go there to visit someone, to help someone out, to offer my support, to check out the cafeteria. I'm fascinated by cafeterias. It's like its own little ecosystem in there. It's like its own little world, its own little biosphere. It's like airports. Airports are the same. I was having kind of a brief conversation about this with my producer daughter. And I was just fascinated by, you know, the concurrence of everyday kind of wherewithal tools to get you through a day, like a cafeteria, like a place for worship within the hospital. Airports are the same. I actually love airports. I fucking love them. If I don't have to be on the plane, if I'm not getting on the plane, it's like being in a wedding. Like, I love weddings, as long as I don't have to be in them, as long as it's not me up there, you know. But airports are the same. It's like there's a whole like life of, you know, going on. There's like a whole flow of, you know, people coming and going, and, you know, it's kind of this transference of energy. There's these energies that are being kind of this transference, people going places, coming from somewhere. That you were just in Chicago. What, you're going to New York? What, you're going to Ireland? That's so bad. That's cool. Like, and you can just sit there and you can have, you know, you can have a drink. You can sit there, watch people coming and going. And it's a culmination too. It's like, it's a melting pot of people, because, you know, all walks of life, all people, all, doesn't matter. It's not, there's, it breaks down the barriers it's a personification of integration versus segregation, because all walks of life have to come through there, and hospitals and airports and even weddings, you know, celebrities, religious people, doctors, surgeons, you know, you name it. I mean, you're not exempt from passing through this energy of what's known as an airport, you know, or a hospital or a wedding. But dispatch texted me the other day, "Hey, are you going to work Thanksgiving?" I said, "Holidays are for bitches." Of course I am. Holidays are for bitches. But so much happens in and around these markers, these day, these day markers, what we call Thanksgiving, you know, what we call this focal point of congregation to reaffirm our connection with our family, friends, people, coworkers, whoever. You live in, like I say, like when I was growing up, you know, in the malls, I always enjoyed, like, the mall is another example of being swept up into this kind of purpose. You know, it's the modern day marketplace. It's the modern day bazaar, the modern day barter, the modern day market, black market, whatever you want to call it. It's our homogenized, sterilized, corporatized version. And but so much kind of happens in and around it, and the energy is so, there's a lot of potential energy, a lot of great energy, a lot of fun energy, a lot of neglectful energy, willfully pessimistic energy, willfully I don't know. It's all like I say, it's like it's all going somewhere. This is all pent up and distributed in an effort to go somewhere, like an airport. You know, all the events that happen in and around, say, like when I was in years ago, when I was coming back from Australia, I was in Japan, I was in Tokyo at Narita Airport, and I just don't want to be on that plane. I don't want to do it. I don't want to. I'm not there for that reason. But in this particular instance, when I was sitting in Japan, I had to anesthetize myself. I needed anesthesia in the form of vodka. And I drank copious amounts of this. And I duly anesthetized myself. To the point, where I was, I recall going into the bathroom pre-boarding to use the facilities, and I had this ring on. I bought this ring in this little village in Scotland, and it had these kind of eternal symbols on. It was kind of a cool ring, like a little pewter ring. And I set it down. I put it on like one of those little kind of metal shelves that are above the sinks in an airport bathroom. And then I forgot, and I left it there. And I was pretty drunk. I was pretty well lubed up at this point. And so my cognitive skills were sorely lacking. But at some point after using the facilities, it dawned on me, I recognized the fact that I am missing my ring. I'm all of a sudden, my ring's gone. I'm like, wow, shit, what happened? So I'd retrace my steps, and I'm like, oh shit, I took it off in that bathroom. I went in there, and the ring wasn't in there. I'm like, oh shit. So I go up to the closest kind of information desk, and these cool little Japanese chicks were up there, and they don't speak a word of English. But I go up there, I'm like, hey, I lost a ring, and it, you know, and I'm kind of pantomiming like a ring. I'm making like circular gestures with my hand, and they were looking at me like I had two heads, and then they started to giggle back and forth, and then they finally, one of them held up her hand, and it happened to be, she was wearing my ring. And I said, that's it. And they kind of laughed and they gave it back to me. And it was cool. But you know, like life happens in and around these outposts of life, you know, like airports and hospitals, you know, transactions in and amongst these situations. It's kind of cool. I don't know. But getting back to like the malls, like I really like it's malls. I mean, Sunrise Mall, the one I was talking about, I'd mentioned in a previous podcast, which is now nearly abandoned. It's sadly, it's just kind of, you know, modernization has kind of left a lot of malls kind of in its wake. And we all kind of just push a button and it shows up on our doorstep now. And there's really no, I don't know. Again, there's no nostalgia. There's no kinetic energy. There's no potential energy that's being exuded. But I used to love going to the mall and go, Christmas shopping, because it's very festive. It's like, whether you subscribe to any of it or not, and you don't have to, but there's definitely an energy. There's an energy there. Like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer came from a mall promotion. Montgomery Ward's. Montgomery Ward's created Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. They, back probably in a New York, I think it was in New York. Let me see if I remember this. Is this right? It was created by the department store chain Montgomery Ward created our version of the present day version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And in 1939, it was in Chicago. So there was a copywriter who worked for Montgomery Ward, a gentleman by the name of Robert L. May, who was apparently known by his peers to be good at writing limericks and children's stories. And so because of this, he was chosen to write a Christmas story to be used for this promotional coloring book. They gave away, at this time of year, Montgomery Ward gave away coloring books to try and get more shoppers into their stores during the holiday season. So they enlisted this guy, Robert May, to come up with an idea. And as a small child, he was often picked on, this guy. So he decided to make it kind of an ugly duckling tale, which he wrote in the same verse as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. So, he presented it to his boss. His boss didn't like it at first due to the fact that he felt that a red nose implied the reindeer had been drinking. Yeah, because that's what they do. However, once it was partially illustrated by another gentleman, this guy named Denver Gillen, that's a cool name, who worked in the art department of Montgomery Ward's. Like, back in the day, like, malls had, like, shit. Like, art departments and copywriters and the whole promotional, like, ad campaign, you know? It was, like, real legit shit you want. It wasn't, like, some kind of, like, lifeless structure, this kind of sad framework that's kind of littered with, you know, hooligans and, uncoordinated, unhealthy, overweight security guards. There was staffs, there was people that made a career out of this. My ex-wife's uncle, like, worked for Sears for like 40 years. Like, he made a career out of it. And he's a teacher now, but I mean, you can make a career. I mean, this was like a real thing now. I mean, now it's just all kiosks and kind of awkward, like, you know, dealing with being awkwardly confronted by some, you know, person that wants to spray you with perfume out of a kiosk or show you, like, the latest in drone technology. You know, you're getting accosted by these wannabe influencers, and then the other influencers are being photographed for Instagram, and their poor Instagram, you know, sidekick is being drug around through all forms of, awkwardness. And so this guy Denver Gillen, so let me back up. He was a friend of May's, Robert May's, and somehow, based on the artwork, it was approved. The story was approved in the first year after its creation. Around 2.4 million copies of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer were given away. So this was 1939. By 1946, over 6 million copies of the story had been distributed by Montgomery Ward. That's fascinating. which was particularly impressive considering it wasn't printed through most of World War II. So there you go. That's where Rudolph came from. Matter of fact, that watch that my lady and I watched the other night, it was on YouTube. Check it out. The original. Good shit. You know, this poor stigmatized little reindeer, little caribou. He's a little caribou. He was born with this light bulb of a nose, and his dad's like, what? We'll just have to hide his nose. Like, we'll make him look like the rest of the kids. We don't want him to look different. We don't like diversity. You know, back in, this is like the Rankin and Bass, Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass, these two guys that just kind of owned Christmas. They did all these, they did Frosty the Snowman. They did Santa Claus is Coming to Town. They did The Little Drummer Boy. And Rudolph, man, is just like a great tale, but it's like very, like these were very repressed people, because, Rudolph's dad, Prancer, or Dancer, who knows? I don't think Rudolph, who is Rudolph's dad? Let's take a paternity. Wouldn't that be funny if there was like a Maury Povich where like Rudolph's on there, like who's your, and they got Dancer and Prancer and Blitzen and Vixen and Comet, and they're all up there, and he's like, Comet, you are the father. Anyway, so they're like, no son of mine is going to go out with a blinking beak. Even Dean Martin's like, in his version of, he called him Rudy the Red-Beaked Reindeer. Like Dean Martin's like the classic Christmas crooner. He's just, singing about Rudolph the Red-Beaked Reindeer. But his dad just wasn't having it. And he took him out, to show Santa. And Santa's like, what? You can't have that nose. You're crazy. So he's kind of like, he's maligned. He's like, you're different, so you got to be ostracized from the community. So he, but ultimately, see, they put a big giant prosthetic covering, like a big giant thing over his nose that looked totally natural. And everyone was cool except for Clarice, who's like, when he went to practice reindeer games, she's like, is there something wrong with your nose? You kind of talk funny. He's like, what's the matter with the way I talk? He can't even breathe, poor guy. He's like, oh, nothing. You just have a giant fucking nose. And so, like, he finally gets up the courage to ask her to walk home with him after reindeer practice. And she's like, okay, uh-huh. She's like, oh, and I think you're cute, even though you got that giant fucking nose. And he's like, I'm cute. He's so jazzed up. He's like, so... his like dopamine just fucking just goes through the roof. So he starts flying around and everyone's all like, whoa, what a great flyer. And then he comes down and he's like, she said I'm cute. And then his prosthetic nose pops off. And so Prancer, who's leading the whole reindeer games thing, all the other reindeers suck. They can't fly except Rudolph can. But he's like, what? Look at your nose. You're different. Get out of here. So like, again, they kind of boot him out of the whole thing. Make sure he's not in any reindeer games. I'm like, what the fuck, man? This poor guy, Robert May, must have had a really ugly duckling experience as a child. So he gets ostracized, and then there's always like a dual story. Like there's always if you'll notice, like in a lot of films and TV, there's always like two stories happening. The other story is this kid Hermie the elf. And who wants to be a dentist? So all the other elves, they all look the same. They all got pointy ears. They're all bald, except for the tall one with glasses. But the rest of them all look the same, except for Hermie. He's like, I don't want to be an elf. And then the head elf, this guy who looks like, he looks like kind of a, I don't know, like a, what's a, he looks like, he probably runs like the local chapter of like, like a biker club or something. I don't know. He's like, Hermie doesn't. What's the matter with you? What's eating you? He's like,
well, I'm just not satisfied. I want to be a dentist.
Oh, you just want to be a dentist? Why? What? You want to be a dentist? Like, he just totally, he's so, like, taken aback by the notion that this elf doesn't want to be like everybody else and look like everybody else, except for the tall one with the glasses. And then he's like, Herbie wants to be a dentist. And then they all, like, start telling each elf, like, turns to the other elf. He's like, Herbie wants to be a dentist. And then he goes to the next one. Herbie
wants to be a dentist.
Herbie wants to be a dentist. Herbie wants to be a... By the end of the whole table where they're all making toys, it's probably a different story by the end of it. He's like, Herbie wants to get a sex change. or something. And anyway, so he gets ostracized. He's like, no elf's going to be a dentist. You're crazy. So they all said, you know, he gets ostracized. And so he sets out into the snow. And so Rudolph and Hermie run into each other. And they team up because they're buddies now. And so then they kind of like get lost out in the snow. Like neither of which get hypothermia, which is amazing. And then they run into Yukon Cornelius, the greatest prospector in the Yukon, looking for silver and gold and gold and silver. Silver and gold, you know, that whole thing. And so they team up with this guy, this maniac. He's got his dogs and his dog sled and his pickaxe, and he's throwing his pickaxe everywhere, and he's licking his pickaxe, looking for silver and gold and what have you. And they have to escape the abominable snow monster because he's coming out this gigantic, like, he's like 80 times the size of Bigfoot. He starts coming out. He's just this malevolent being, this creature, just coming after. He just wants to eat everything and everyone. So they chip off a piece of ice, an ice floe, and they escape his ass, and they end up on the island of Misfit Toys. So, which is a weird place. It's like a spotted elephant. They're all different. It's like Charlie in the Box. I'm a Charlie in the Box. Like, nobody wants a Charlie in the Box. Like, nobody gives a fuck, dude. Why do they all got to be Jack in the Boxes? It's not, his name's not Jack. He's a Charlie. I think Charlie in the Box is, I think he came out of that box in a big way. You know, if you know what I mean. That's cool, though. I mean, you need gay toys. And then there's like a squirt gun that shoots jelly. Like, that's not even a bad toy. They all look like fun toys. But they just, society just hates them because they're different. You're different. So you got to go to this island where this flying lion lives. And he sits on a throne. And the sergeant of arms is like this polka-dotted white elephant who obviously is part of some kind of psychedelic trip. But he's like, you can crash here tonight, but then you got to split. So he gives him, he puts him up in like this little house, this tiny house. And Yukon Cornelius, the dude, they all climb in the same bed. It's like Yukon Cornelius, he's still got his big giant trekking backpack on, his knit cap, and his pickaxe. He just climbs into bed with Hermie, this weird little elf, the only elf with hair, who wants to be a dentist, and then a reindeer, a caribou, with a obvious, like, he's obviously been exposed to radiation, so he's radioactive. So you've got a radioactive caribou, you got a dentist elf, and then this dude who won't take his backpack off for some reason, all in the same bed, in this tiny house. I don't even know how Yukon Cornelius got through the front door because he's too big. But the whole thing is, like, Rudolph didn't want to, like, put his friends in danger because his nose, he knows this abominable snow monster will find them in the snow because of his nose. So he sets off again on his own. Like, he's just a total loner. Like, he's really taking this whole thing real hard. But then one thing leads to another, and he makes it back. He grows, like, he just kind of wanders. He kind of wanders the earth like Kane from Kung Fu for a while in the snow. But then he grows up. He starts growing up, and he gets antlers. But then they find, but then what happens is this abominable snow monster just comes out of nowhere, and he's going to get, oh, what was it? Oh, so when... yeah, when Rudolph makes it back to the castle, months later, his parents were looking for him. Clarice is looking for him. She's like, I want my man. I want my man back. And so they go. So he's like, oh, shit, I got to go look for him. They've been gone for months. Santa's like, they've been gone for months. And Christmas Eve is 2 hours away. What are the odds? So he goes out. He goes out looking for his parents. They find him in a cave, but they're cornered. He gets there just in the nick of time after being gone for months. And the Abominable Snowman is about to fucking just fuck them up, right? But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Yukon Cornelius pops up. And he gets the Abominable Snow Monster's attention, and then he runs him over. Him and the dogs and the sled just run this Abominable Snow Monster over a cliff. They all go over the cliff and they disappear. And Rudolph's like, "No!" He's like, "No, Richie!" And that it would appear would be the end of Yukon Cornelius. But no, in the end, Christmas Eve night, Mrs. Claus is trying to fatten up old Santa, trying to give him high blood pressure and stuff. Eat, Papa, eat. He's like, bitch, I got other concerns. There's a big storm out. I don't have a radioactive caribou to fly me through the storm. But if I did, and then all of a sudden Rudolph shows up. He's like, hey, we made it, but Yukon Cornelius is dead. And so Santa's about to cancel Christmas. He's like, I can't get through this storm. I'm fucked. He's just having kind of a meltdown in front of all the elves. He's kind of looking like a little bitch. And then all of a sudden, Rudolph's nose is going off. He's like, he's having like a flare-up, you know, like herpes. And that shit's just blinding Santa. So he's like, Rudolph, your nose. Your fucking nose. And then finally he he's in the middle of some kind of like personal psychedelic meltdown of his own. He's like, Rudolph, your nose. Ooh, your nose. He's like tripping balls. He's like, your nose is great. You're gonna lead the way. And then all of a sudden, Christmas is back on. They're decorating the tree. They're singing elf songs, you know. You know, I'm an elf elf. I'm an elf elf elf. I'm a big elf.
I'm a little elf.
And I don't know what that song is. I just made that up. And guess who shows up? There's conceivably no way they can put the star on top of the tree because nobody's tall enough. And who should show up? Oh, Yukon Cornelius with the Abominable Snow Monster. That's right. They all live. They went over the cliff. And Rudolph's like, but I saw you go over the cliff. He's like, I never told you. He calls him. The whole time he's calling the Abominable Snow Monster. Yukon Cornelius calls the Abominable Snow Monster a bumble. He's a bumble. These bumbles don't know what's good for him. So when he finally shows up, and he's like, Rudolph's like tripping. He's like, what? I thought you were dead. I thought your body exploded down at the bottom of the rocks. He's like, I forgot to tell you. Bumbles bounce. Oh, they all laugh. And then so the Abominable Snow Monster, he just happens to be this gigantic freak who is coincidentally tall enough to put the star on the tree. So it all comes back around. And what was the lesson we learned from all this? I don't really know. Other than just maybe we can celebrate diversity. You know? At least we can do that. At least we can do that. But anyway, I'm sure you got more important things to do. It's Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. You know, I said my piece. I just wanted to, I don't know, I'm getting excited. The thing I like most about Thanksgiving, I'll tell you this, is because that's the day when Christmas music kicks off. So all of a sudden they got these dedicated, you know, radio stations, all they from like the day of Thanksgiving on, or maybe the day after. I think some start the day of Thanksgiving. It's just all they play is back-to-back Christmas songs, you know. Everyone, Mariah Carey, you know, all I want for Christmas is you. You know, you'll hear that for the first time out of the 8,300 times it's going to be played. And everything, Bing Crosby, you know, it's just nonstop Christmas songs until the day after Christmas. And I like that. And I like that for no other reason than it's just festive and it's good energy. So that's why I get probably the most nowadays, that's what I get most excited about until December 26th. If I hear one fucking note of Christmas songs, if I hear one note, I'm fucking burning something down, man. That's all there is to it. But before I go, love, you boy, what day is this? Why, it's Christmas Day, sir. Well, fuck off then. Go get the biggest goose. No. I just wanted to give a shout out. My last podcast, I wanted to give a shout out to Connor Mance. Look him up on YouTube. They just had the NCAA Division I Cross Country Championships. And this guy, this Mormon, again, here we go with Mormons. Matter of fact, it was my buddy Jeff, who's a Mormon. My buddy Jeff was the one that always went to these holiday excursions with me to the mall to go get our Christmas shopping done. Even though he's Mormon, I didn't think they celebrated Christmas. I don't think there was a provision in their clause that said they were allowed to. But anyway, Connor Mance, BYU junior, the only back-to-back in the history of the NCAA Division I Cross Country Championships to win the title twice in 1 year, because they didn't have one in 2020. So in March of 2021, he won the Cross Country Championships. And then last Saturday, four days ago, the Saturday prior to Thanksgiving is when they always run the Division I. He just smoked these guys. I mean, that was a fast rate. He ran 28:33 for the 10K in cross country. I mean, that's fucking stupid fast. Good for him, man. What a stud, man. And he's a junior, so he could be one of only four guys. Let's see, it was Jerry Lindgren, Steve Prefontaine, Henry Rono, and Edward Cheserek. Yeah, four guys have won three NCAA Division I cross country championships. So he has the opportunity to do that next year if he wins, which is phenomenal. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal. His coach, Ed Eystone, though, shout out to Ed Eystone, the two-time Olympian, and Stormin' Mormon. He's another Mormon. He's a Mormon runner. Mormon runner, I know. He was second in the 88 Olympic trials to Mark Conover of Humboldt State. But shout out to Ed Eystone, who is turning out to be a phenomenal coach for the distance guys at BYU. Say what you want about Mormons. There's something cool about Mormons. I don't know what it is. They're just the nicest people. You know? They're just the nicest people. But I will keep this short, boys and girls. That's it. That is the podcast for today. Have a great Thanksgiving. And I'm looking forward to the holiday. Celebrate. And that's it. Stop. Turn it off. Please. Turn it off. It's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over, Johnny.
Anyway, I'll talk at you later. Arrivederci, baby.